Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Yes, indeed, it is the Get Right right here on 105.3 The Fan. My name is Reginald Adatula, joined by Blake Elliott.
Yes, sir.
We got Justin Honore on the ones and twos this evening. Thank you, sir. And thank you guys for rolling with us on a Thursday evening in the Metroplex. Should be a fun one. We have you for 4 hours till 11 p.m. here on your home of the World Series champion Texas Rangers and the Dallas Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan, currently at the same damn time on our various streaming sites, YouTube, 105 through the Fan, twitch.tv/DallasFanCam. You can catch Draft 101 with the likes of Brian Broaddus, Bobby Belt, Zach Wolchuk, some various others from DallasCowboys.com. They're getting ready for the NFL draft first round, or the entirety of the draft, but the first round takes place a week from today, man. But we're almost there, man. We're almost there,
it.
Blake.
Come on, man.
Super excited for that. Obviously, you've got Clippers, Mavs coming up on Sunday. We're going to get you ready for that at 7:20, talking to Law Murray of The Athletic. He covers the Clippers by trade, and so we're going to get some more insight into what's happening in that series, talk about that, and, you know, get some X factors, all sorts of things there. So, look, man, and we are watching the final night of NHL regular season hockey, where we'll find out if your stars are going to face off against the Golden Knights of Las Vegas or the Los Angeles Kings. And, I mean, before we actually find that out, we will talk to our friend Joey Erickson of Locked On Stars to get a little bit of a taste ahead of the postseason for your Western Conference number one seed, Dallas Stars. But let's begin here with the World Series champions. How about that? Does that sound good, Blake?
Sounds indubitably great.
Okay, you had a little sprinkle in there. I like that. As your Texas Rangers finished off a 4-game set in Detroit earlier today, they get the victory against the Detroit Tigers and ultimately win the series 3-1 with a 9-7 victory earlier today. You had the debut of Jack Leiter. And so I kind of want to talk about the debut that I feel like we were all anticipating ever since. What was it, 2021 that he was drafted?
Second pick overall.
Right? We've all been anticipating it. Folks were looking at if he could come up in the course of that season. And, like, we've been clamoring for this moment. And, obviously, it did not come up with the same level of fanfare because of, you know, Jack Leiter's development has not been the inferno, the supernova that I think people wanted at that time. How did you take in, first of all, his debut on the mound, and what were your, like, general impressions of Jack Leiter in this game?
Yeah, so on some points I think I will agree with most people who have already spoken on this, and on some I might disagree. I think it was pretty obvious that he was pretty nervous, as you saw, like, before the game, kind of him bouncing around in the dugout. Was kind of talked about on the broadcast. It was obviously a big thing. Is obviously had his family as pitched before.
I think Al Leiter said there would be some like maybe 40-50 folks near and dear to him at the game. So that obviously would raise the stakes for an individual in their debut.
There's a lot of pressure, and you're hoping to live up to it to its highest degree and pitch as well as you can. I will say I think it helped that he was on the road in Detroit versus being at home in front of this World Series crowd that's amped and pumped every single day, every game. They want the best thing. They just team just won a World Series. The expectations are higher versus playing on Detroit on a Thursday afternoon where maybe, I'll take a wild guess, is not as many fans would have been there. This would have been at Globe Life Field. So I thought obviously he had the great start. Three pitches, strikeout, gets a couple runners on, gets out of the jam. A little bit of a rocky second inning. I was kind of struggle with control.
A bit of a rocky. How many pitches did he pitch in the second inning? It felt like something like 30 pitches.
He was up to 50 when he was still in the second inning. But I will say, like, and obviously he struggled getting behind on the count, had some walks. I wasn't like seeing it like, oh, wow, this guy can never be a major leaguer. I was just, okay, he's a little nervous out there. And I noticed, and I texted Alec Medford this, when he got behind in the count, he wasn't really attacking the zone. He was trying to get guys to chase, and it felt like he didn't have a lot of control over his fastball. He kept missing high, kept missing outside, and it was pretty far off the plate. So I think it's some things that can be tweaked, and it was talked about earlier. There's not a lot of movement on his fastball, which is something that I'm assuming that doesn't really change all too much. Like, it's not something you're just going to snap a finger, and all of a sudden your fastball has movement. I'm sure Maddox will get on top of that. And then, the third inning. So, after the second, he has struggles, then retires seven batters in a row.
Yeah, it looked like during the course of that, I mean, arduous second inning for Jack Leiter, there was thoughts of, is he going to make it out of this second inning? Are they going to have to get Urania up and into the game? I mean,
I'm glad he stayed in.
And I'm glad that Bochy left him in as well because he recovered pretty well, as you mentioned, in the third inning. He went into the fourth inning, ultimately going 3 2/3. But this is part of his recovery, this right here from the game called by Matt Hicks and Jared Sandler.
2-2 with one out. The pitch. Swing and a miss. He gets Carpenter on a changeup just off the plate with some good arm side fade to it. So Leiter now with three strikeouts, and that's the second out in the inning. He struck out Carpenter twice.
Yeah, and Carpenter has been a little bit of the Rangers' killer in this series when it comes to the Tigers. Yeah, one of three strikeouts for him on the evening, three and two-thirds innings worked. If you look at the stat line, it does not look like a good one. Eight hits, seven earned runs allowed, three walks, which speaks to kind of the lack of control that you talked about, which is an issue that he has dealt with, is, you know, putting guys on bases, free base runners, which obviously if you do that in baseball, you're not going to succeed by and large. But I think it was a little deceptive, this line, because I think someone on the text line, on the Frankel injury attorney text line, 877-881-1053, mentioned it from the 940. Jack was very nervous. He honestly wasn't bad. Should have been heading to the fifth, giving up four if not for Leody in the outfield. And we'll talk about Leody here in a second. But it felt like, especially in the first inning, right? Like, you could tell that the moment wasn't too big for him because he came out and hit his spots and located pretty well. But he did not keep that going for a while. And I think it's one of the things about it. It's very evident that he's not fully done and ready yet. Yeah. He has the stuff. You can see it that he has the stuff because he was able to get some swings and misses in the course of this. The velocity was pretty high. I think at some point 97s in that first inning.
He was throwing 96 pretty consistently on that fourth inning.
And so, yeah, I'm looking at him. I'm like, this is a dude that clearly still has the stuff. Now you just need to get the level of control to where there's some consistency there. And it was nice to see him continue working through the struggles that he had. I think we all knew that he was not fully ready. This was just an instance where a spot start demanded him come up. But it was nice to see, hey, man, there's still a lot of good things. Don't get too down on a young guy in Jack Leiter. And for me, I saw it and I was like, okay, there was a little bit of bad luck with some of the defensive situations that happened behind him. And he wasn't able to keep the control all the way through. But if he can get that together, which early on in AAA, he started getting that together. I think if he can continue to work on that, he'll get ready. And I think that he's still a viable starting pitcher for your Texas Rangers down the line.
Yeah, I'm in the same place. I think there's been a couple people on Twitter and people talking, thinking it's like doomsday, that they see the stat line and think that the world is over and the Rangers don't have any pitchers. I'm like, guys, it's okay. Let's take a chill pill. Like I said yesterday on the radio, the expectations are now risen astronomically. You just won the World Series. Everybody wants you to win every game with a perfect game, have 15 home runs, and not be close in the game. You're going to have some series. It's a 17 games in 17 days. You're going to have some times where guys don't look awesome out there. I mean, a lot of the big sluggers in the league haven't been hitting that well. Ronald Acuna just hit his first homer the other day. Like, It's okay. I thought Leiter was still solid. Like you mentioned, he had some good stuff, location. He struggled with a little bit. I think he found his strikeout pitch with the changeup. Looked really nice to kind of get batters out once he got it in a favorable count. But I still think he is in development, in construction, needs some work. But if he needed to do another spot start, I think he's still viable.
So that was a start. And as I look back to the text line again, 940 said they felt like he relied on the fastball too much, didn't have command of his curve, which is his best pitch. And the 817 didn't feel like he looked comfortable pitching from the stretch earlier, either. And all those things I feel like have some truth to them.
Yeah.
But it felt like this was a situation where he was called up more out of necessity than him being fully prepared to be in the majors. But it's nice. He got his debut.
It's out the way.
It is out the way. And now he has the opportunity to maybe have some of those expectations you mentioned lowered a little bit. Now, we talked real quick about a little bit of some issues in the outfield. If you can give me cut three here, Justin. Had to deal with this man. Let's have a little bit of conversation about this guy.
The 1-1 breaking pitch is hit hard into left field, and that will drop in front of Green for the base hit. Rounding third is Smith. He comes in to score. Stopping at second is Duran. Leody Taveras with a run-scoring single, and the Rangers are up now 9-7.
Leody Taveras, your 9-hole hitter, your center fielder in this game. 2-for-5 with a RBI and a run scored when all was said and done. Both of those hits come in the latter innings of this game. That's not exactly what we want to talk about, but in totality, we already have, just as a collective around these Rangers, had some conversations about Leody Taveras, but let's dive into them. Do you want to talk about what the text that you sent me during the course of this game?
I sent Alec and Reggie the same text. I said, pretty much, what do we need to do with Leody? What benefit is he giving the Rangers? And I rattled off. I said, I think he's a pretty subpar defender and batter. And I said, is it better to have him out there at the expense of not getting Wyatt Langford some outfield reps, some outfield experience, and just having him in the everyday lineup? And then, or just putting Jankowski out there in spot starts as well? And Reggie replied, he said he doesn't think that, what's it called?
I don't believe him to be a subpar defender at all.
Not a subpar defender.
Not at all, right? And he has had some instances this season where you've had a little bit of head scratchers on some plays that you believe that he should make in the outfield. However, I think that we might be a little bit entitled in that way because of how, like, the amount of speed, amount of range that he has in the outfield, where there's things that he makes look a little bit more routine than they typically would be.
He's really good in the
league
alley.
Average. Absolutely. Now, the one of the reasons that we bring this up is that there was a deep shot to center field that he jumped for and completely missed.
Yeah.
And I know that in looking at it, it looked like that's one that you absolutely should have made. And I think Bochy even said that that's one that they kind of expect Leody to make. However, like, you look at that one in the course of it happening, like, that's a great, like, that's a play where I think the batting average on a hit like that is some like 570 something typically. Like, that's not as and it comes off the bat really hard. Like, that's not as easy as it looks. But even if I'm going to grant you that and say he probably should have made that, Leody Taveras is, it's easy to forget that he's 25 years old. Yeah. Like, he's still relatively young, and development isn't linear. Don't get me wrong. But, like, there's still the possibility for growth. However, I'm not going to sit here and blow smoke and act like, well, he's going to become a great hitter. Like, the bat does need to get better. And obviously, the couple of hits today helped raise his batting average to a 231. He's slugging 323. Like, I mean, his on-base percentage is in the fives. Yeah. It's not exactly not even close to being great.
I was looking at the stats, and pretty much for every batting statistic, he's at the bottom as far as guys that are playing him. Like, not counting Kisner and Walsh that are getting, like, spot starts. Like, the guys that are hitting every day, he is towards the bottom or the last in all of them. So,
but he's an everyday outfielder. Yeah. Absolutely, he's an everyday outfielder. I think what makes it interesting for this team is you have a lot of outfielders that you feel like could be everyday outfielders, especially Evan Carter, who looks like offense, defense, he can be the center fielder of every day. And I think that then feels like it applies the pressure in our minds to what is Leody doing and possibly making him expendable, especially when Wyatt Langford could slide into that left field spot and you could get his bat into the lineup every day without having to do the DH thing. Yeah. I think that's where it gets interesting. But if we're just going flatline, should Leody be here? The answer is absolutely yes. I think that what that then puts you in a place for is if you get into a place in the future where you feel like he becomes a little bit more expendable, feels harsh, but I think you know what I'm trying to get to, you could see Leody move on. But I also know that organizations, I imagine, are going to be a little tepid on moving a guy that is young, that has a lot of prospect or progress ahead of him possibly, because you never like seeing a guy elsewhere then take the leap that you were waiting.
I just feel like the Rangers are still in win now mode. They're still in trying to build a dynasty mode. They're not I think they are in the development of obviously pitching. You always want to be developing that and young guys. But Leody is 25, so he is not old, but he's not he's a prospect fresh coming out of spring training or whatnot.
There are prospects that come up 24, 25.
I agree. I'm saying Leody's now. Leody's been with the team.
But some of that is because you had a team that was not great and they brought him up early. And I think that also shaped the framing that we have had on Leody from time to time. And I'm not saying that that's the entire reason of the criticism. There's reasonable criticism in there, but I do think that matters.
Do you think he has limitations? I think he does. I think he has a cap.
No, he absolutely has some limitations. Don't get me wrong.
And I just feel other than Jankowski, all the other guys you're going to put out there probably have a higher ceiling. Maybe a lower floor. We could argue that. But I gave you this example when I texted you.
Mm-hmm.
I said that it feels like Leody is maybe Josh Green, a young guy that fans wanted to see, and he had a good play last year, and then this year you're expecting good things. The moment that he's not really living up to those, and there's guys behind him, Wyatt, whoever else you want to put, Jankowski, whoever else you want to put in the outfield, there's other guys behind him that have been producing at a decent level, and we're looking for you to do one thing good, play defense. I don't think anyone's hoping Leody hits 30 home runs this year, even the manager.
Buddy, if Leody hits 30 home runs, I need to go put some money on various numbers, because we're in an entirely different world at that point.
You're hoping for a Leody to have good defense and be a solid nine hitter, get on base, get some walks. He's been okay at that, and if anything, a little bit below average. So I just think when you are asked to do one thing and you're not doing that one thing that the manager will be like, well, he's giving us great defense. It might not show up in a box score, but he's doing this when you're also having errors, noticeable ones. I don't think that bodes well for you keeping that spot and making yourself not expendable. I think he's making it tough on himself. Not saying he's not an MLB player, shouldn't be on this roster. I just don't think he's made it an easy conversation on himself. He's definitely made himself expendable.
I think that this is, the effect of having a very trained eye on what is a marathon, not a sprint. Go ahead and chalk that one up for me. Thank you. Because, look, 142 games ago, you're 20 games into the season.
Uh-huh.
And I understand this is not something that is just from this season. There's people that have had questions of how long does Leody man center field when you have the likes of Evan Carter, who that's his primary position, or at least what he played a majority of coming up. But I think we can get a little bit greedy. We can get a little bit short-sighted. That's a very good defensive center fielder. And, on today is a weird day, is a tough day to bring up concerns about him, because he gave you a double, he scored a run for you, and I understand that he had that one instance where he missed that, but these are not infallible players. Even the players that you look at as great defensive players are going to make mistakes. So I hear what you're saying. I'm not trying to invalidate that, because I do think that's going to be a question that this organization has to ask themselves when you have this amount of, talent in the outfield. But I don't want us to go too far as to get slanderous on a guy who has been pretty damn good defensively.
I think he's been solid. I won't say pretty that high. I just feel like out of all the guys in the lineup, he's made the most stakes for a guy with the lowest ceiling out of your starters. Not saying that he's the worst player that's played for the Rangers this year and he can do no right. He's made some great plays. I just think of all the guys in your starting lineup, I think he has the lowest ceiling and has also made the same or a little bit more errors or batting issues, whatever it may be, problems.
Obviously this is not anything that will get litigated now or anywhere near now, but as we get into the summer and those types of things, I'm super interested. And I still don't think that that's going to be something that's a move that they pull the trigger on this year, even if they think about that. But how this organization views that particular position, and you have four outfielders that you want to play every day at the very least. Clearly, that's something that eventually they're going to have to think about and have some level of discussion on. It's the Get Right here on 105 Through the Fan. Thanks for hanging out with us on a Thursday evening in the Metroplex. Lots more coming, including coming up next. Let's hit the D&M Leasing Hotline and talk to Law Murray of The Athletic. He covers the Clippers. Let's get ready for Clippers-Mavericks Game 1 on Sunday. We'll do it next on The Fan. It's the Get Right here on 105 Through the Fan. Reginald Atatula here with you alongside Blake Elliott.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for rolling with us on this Thursday evening. Let's waste no time and turn our attention to the D&M Leasing Hotline. He works for The Athletic, covering the Clippers. You can follow him on Twitter, at Law Murray, the NU. His name is Law Murray. Law, how you doing, my man?
I feel good. It's going to be a very interesting weekend, let's just put it that way.
Man, I mean, we are in that same boat with you. Like, we feel exactly the same way. And I think all of this starts with the idea of Kawhi Leonard and the question marks around him. We got some information today, but it seems like we've had kind of dueling pieces of information from different sources. So I'm going to ask you, in your professional opinion, with your expertise, what are we looking like when it comes to Kawhi Leonard for game one on Sunday?
I'll just put it this way. I'm going to be surprised if you get a full complement of Kawhi Leonard minutes. I'm prepared for anything at this point. I just don't think that Kawhi is at a point where he can play and be the best version of himself come game one to start this series. And so the fact that Lawrence Frank had to address the media, I think a lot of that is we absolutely had to get something out of Tyronn Lue. Just trying to understand what the level of participation is. What is the level of treatment? Like, what is Kawhi dealing with? Just trying to get some transparency from somebody because, you know, we're always going to be deferred to the media, the medical staff. And it's like, we don't talk to them. We're going to talk to you guys. We're going to talk to the players. Like, even the players are like, we're, you know, going to defer to the organization. So it's what we signed up for when we cover the LA Clippers. Or let's just put it this way, when you're assigned to cover the LA Clippers. So I am not looking at Kawhi being, you know, savior season Kawhi. I think they're going to need him, that version, at some point. And optimism for the Clippers is that he'll get to that point eventually. But I think this is going to be a long series, and game one is going to underscore that one way or the other.
Law, I'll ask you this. Obviously, barring Kawhi's health, say he is mildly healthy and out there, who do you see?
We can't bar any kind of health. Like, this is the playoffs, right?
Of
like,
course.
Can you win with your best players? Can you win without them?
Yeah.
Is the game going to be 0-0 with 5-1-5 when it starts? I believe it will be, you know? So let's just, you know, let's talk about what it is.
So I was going to ask, who do you think is going to be guarding Luka? Because I think most Mavs fans in a vacuum would assume it'd be Kawhi Leonard. If Kawhi is not out there or not 100%, who do you see guarding him, and how well do you think they match up against him?
Well, I don't think Kawhi was going to be guarding Luka from the jump.
Okay.
To start the series, to start a game anyway. I think Terrence Mann is going to get that responsibility first off, because Terrence has the least responsibility on the offensive end. Number one. Number two, the same Patrick Beverly. You know, we know that Terrence wants all the smoke. Terrence endeared himself to the Clippers immediately in his first preseason by getting in Luka's face. So this is the series where, as a first-time postseason starter, as far as, you know, obviously he had to start when Kawhi went down 3 years ago, but it's not like T-Man was starting in the Maverick series in 2021 or 2020. He's going to start. And you need him to show his value. He's going to be physical with Luka. He's going to be talking to Luka. And I think he's going to get the assignment. Now, you play the Mavericks, the way the Mavericks play, the way Luka likes to play, he's going to pick his switches. Everyone's going to get a piece of them. And defense in the NBA is a team thing. So, yes, there will be initial assignments. But when that ball moves, when there's rotations, everyone's going to have to be assignment sound. But I think Terrence Mann will get the bulk of the minutes to start. I think you'll see plenty of Russell Westbrook. And if it comes down to it, yeah, you'll get Kawhi, Paul George eventually on him. Probably Kawhi more than anyone if it gets to be critical.
That kind of answers my second question. When it comes to switching, Ty Lue does that a lot, especially 1-4. Do you think you'll see an instance where he is completely switching everything? We know what he did to Zubac in the past playoffs when they matched up, or do you think it's the thing where you have to be a little bit more intentional and not let Kyrie and Luka just pick whoever they want to go against, whether it be Harden or Zubac?
Yeah, I think the Clippers are going to be very interested in getting the ball out of both of those guys' hands somehow. And it's going to be hard when both are on the floor at the same time. But that third best player or that second best player for the Mavericks has to be a fearsome player. He has to actually make the Clippers pay for being older, aggressive, getting the ball out of their hands. So you're going to see a variety of defenses. You're going to see some switching. You're really going to see a lot of blitzes, fires, double teams. And the other Mavericks are going to have to make them pay. Like guys like Tim Hardaway Jr., who's had a very up-and-down season as a shooter, Dante Exum, who I would say is the opposite. Dante's been, you know, he's looked like a guy who was a prize prospect, you know, just 10 years ago. I shouldn't say just 10 years ago. That's a long time. But 10 years ago, Dante was a teenager. Now he's a player who is seasoned. And the only thing you don't know about Dante is how the playoffs will change his game for this particular team. Guys like P.J. Washington. P.J. is the Grant Williams replacement. And the Clippers did not fear Grant Williams at all on the offensive end. P.J. Washington, he's got more of a ceiling, but he probably also has more of a floor. Another guy who's never played in the playoffs, period, not even for, you know, his previous team, the Charlotte Hornets. So, like, I think that when it comes to the Clippers, when it comes to defense, you have to switch things up. You have to give guys different looks. The thing that helps the Clippers if they want to keep a guy like Zubac on the floor is the presence of Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively. As good as those guys have been, they're interior-based centers. They're relatively one-dimensional, and you're not expecting those guys to pick and pop ever. I think that's different than what you got 3 years ago with Kristaps Porzingis on the floor.
And we're talking to Law Murray of The Athletic, who covers the Clippers right here on 105 Through the Fan. And Law, that was exactly where I wanted to go, because I feel like one of the questions in this series is how much can the Clippers stay big, considering that the Mavericks have tried to get themselves to a place where at any given time they have the bigs on the floor, and that vertical aspect has become a big part of their offense. How much can they stay big, and how well have they handled big teams playing against the Clippers this year?
The Clippers love playing against big teams because when it comes to being big, you have to look at what position are you talking about. Are you big because of your centers? Or are you big because of the players next to the centers? And Dallas is interesting because they're obviously have two guys now who can provide vertical spacing and rim protection. That hasn't always been the case with Dallas. You know, no disrespect to Dwight Powell, but especially on the defensive end, the Clippers love to go at him. That's probably been the biggest reason why the Dallas Mavericks have improved defensively. They have respectable rim protection, more than respectable, I would say, over the last month, premier rim protection. And so that's going to be tested in this series. I think the thing with the Clippers is when they are big, when they have the Zubats on the floor, because they have James Harden, James can get the ball to guys in spots that not every guy you know, that the Clippers have had is capable of. Like Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, when they were primary ball handlers, the ISO game was great, but the pick and roll game, it was more about getting your switch and attacking those switches. Now with James, they can still play that way, but they can also utilize the interior big man as well. So it's going to be interesting. The Achilles heel of the Clippers is defensive rebounding. There have been games where the Mavericks have absolutely dominated. I think about the Denver Nuggets game where Kyrie had his miracle game winner.
Yeah.
But there have been games where Dallas doesn't offensive rebound at all. And that's going to be something that, you know, Dallas doesn't need to rebound because they take care of the ball so well. But in a series like this, that's going to be interesting to see if those guys are going to be more willing to crash. And you can already understand – Dallas might not want to crash because if they get burned crashing, they've been one of the worst transition defenses in the league. And so it really depends on how and when you crash and what the Clippers look like, because the Clippers can be big, but the Clippers are also very adept at being small, especially if Kawhi's out there.
Yeah, so that leads me into my last question. When it comes to small ball lineups, the numbers aren't exactly great for the Clippers. How do you see them adapting to some small ball lineups, especially with the playoffs, maybe with Russell Westbrook being on the floor? Can he still coexist with the other three? We know they tried that and that didn't go too well. Norman Powell, just kind of some of those other variations of the lineups without Zubac out there. How comfortable do you feel?
Yeah, first of all, I do want to mention, I did not see y'all guys' rundown. So I love that these are speaking perfectly into the next, the transitions have been so great. So you know, I'll give myself a shout out on that one. But when it comes to the Clippers and their small ball lineups, a lot of the times the Clippers go small out of necessity because they need to chase a margin or they need to change the game up and shake things up and give a team a different look because they are trying to protect a 3-point lead or something like that. And it's like, okay, do whatever you want inside. We don't care how many extra possessions you get. You're not getting threes. And so Russell Westbrook's utilization is going to be a key factor here. They don't have Nicholas Batum, who we saw last night starred for the 76ers in their comeback win, starred for the Clippers when he had to be the guy replacing Zubats in the starting lineup, allowing the Clippers to switch everything while remaining lengthy on the perimeter. So you don't have that level of length. Amir Coffey's not a long player. He's a wing, but he's not – that's not, you know – physically, that's not his strong suit, right? His strong suit is activity and raising the floor, if you will. Russell Westbrook is a guy who he's only 6'3", 6'4", in his 16th NBA season, but at the same time, he's a guy who loves to get in your airspace, is physical, has the respect of the officials as well, and that allows him to be physical in a time of the year where the foul, that whistle is a lot harder to blow. So I think those are the small lineups. Because Gafford is not a post-up big, because P.J. Washington, again, increased touches for P.J. Washington favors the Clippers, considering Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving are on the floor. It's like, I'm pretty sure you'll take a P.J. Washington post-up over anything Kyrie and Luka do. So I think that the Clippers, they're going to be less likely to go small, but it's situational. And if there's one guy who can adjust at an extremely respectable level, especially in the playoffs, it's Tyronn Lue.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
He's going to have a lot of lineups in his bag, and he might have to, depending on Kawhi Leonard's status.
We're talking to Law Murray right here on 105 Through the Fan. And Law, before we let you go, I did want to ask about this. I typically like keeping it on the court with the X's and O's, and that's been phenomenal, but I feel like the vibes portion of this is necessary to discuss because this Mavericks team is in the place where their vibes are immaculate. And I know that Ty Lue at points during the season has called his team soft. And then you also sprinkle on the idea that Brian Damaris, who covers this team, cut a promo on James Harden. I'm interested in, like, what's the mental aspect? What's the mentality of the Clippers coming into this one, both as a team and maybe, like, for James Harden with that particular aspect that adds on top of it?
Well, when that promo was cut, the Clippers were at their nadir period of their longest losing streak of the season. You know, six straight losses. And when they went to Dallas, that was the third straight loss. So I'm sure that the timing, Dallas ate that up, right? But then when the Mavericks came to visit the Clippers in L.A., the Clippers were starting to turn it around. James was starting to figure things out. The rotations were correct because the rotations when they went to Dallas were absolutely terrible. And, you know, that was a big part of it, too. It's like, what are you doing with this new roster? When the Clippers went to visit Dallas in December, right before Christmas, a ninth straight victory, a game that the Clippers controlled even without Paul George playing. Kyrie Irving was out that game as well, but it was clear the Clippers knew exactly what they wanted to do to attack that team. Now, Dallas has changed. The Clippers have gone through their ups, their downs. But I will say this. Tyronn Lue called these dudes out and they responded accordingly. There are some teams that fold. There are some teams that they can't hear that. This team can't take anything for granted. This could be the end of this era of Clipper basketball as far as the stars on this team. The contracts speak for themselves. And so when you talk about intangibles, that is a factor in this series. The fact that Dallas is not just facing any team, but a team that their best player has been eliminated by in two of his three previous postseason experiences. Yeah, you're going to be locked in. The fact that Dallas took a 2-0 series lead with the series starting in L.A. last time around, only to blow that 2-0 series lead. They understand that there's no comfort that will ever exist playing the L.A. Clippers. So I think both sides will be locked in. I think Dallas is playing with a little bit of house money based off of how last year's tankathon went. And so the Clippers, not so much. I think Dallas will be happy to win this playoff series, and that might be considered a successful season for them. That's not the case for the Clippers. They can't just win one or two playoff series. This might be it for this whole group as they enter a new era in their franchise.
His name is Law Murray. He covers the Clippers for The Athletic. You can catch him on Twitter at Law Murray, the NU. Law, we appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time. Looking forward to the series, and hopefully we'll catch you at the AAC when that series comes around for Game 3.
Looking forward to it. Flight's booked.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Law Murray, The Athletic. Appreciate him giving us a little bit of insight into this game that's coming up on Sunday, 2:30 p.m. on ABC. And I believe that we'll also get the first round on Bally as well. If you want to listen to Mark Folwell, Derek Harper, give you that call. Super excited for this one, Blake. I'm
jumping out my seat, Reggie.
Ready to get some Mavs playoff basketball going. And look, we're going to keep giving you more preview of that as we continue this evening on the Get Right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, though, let's go around the NFL, get you the latest on what's happening in the National Football League. We'll do it next on The Fan. Get Right here on 105.3 The Fan. Reginald Adetula here with you alongside Blake Elliott.
Sersky.
Thanks for rolling with us on this Thursday evening on the Metroplex. Once more, thanks to Law Murray for jumping on with us. He's of The Athletic, covers the Clippers ahead of what will be a very fun first round series between your Mavericks and the Los Angeles Clippers. That one starts in LA, game one on Sunday, 2:30 on ABC. I lied to you. I didn't try to, but unintentionally I lied to you. That one will not be covered on Bally, but starting game two, you will get your, you know, tried and true broadcast of Mark Folwell, Derek Harper, I believe Jessica Wade on that as well. And so super excited to get that series going. Playoff basketball, nothing like it. Maybe the only thing that you could talk about that is similar or maybe better, depending on your perspective. Playoff hockey, we're going to get that coming up soon as well. And your Stars last night clinched the number one seed. Later tonight, we'll find out who their opponent will be in the first round of the playoffs. And at 9 p.m. tonight, we'll talk to Joey Erickson of Locked On Stars about that and more. But right now, let's go around the NFL and talk about some of the big ticket items or some of the big things that are happening in the National Football League. And let's start here. We were talking last night about some of the spots in the NFL draft that could switch, you know, that could maybe, you know, be pivotal.
The Cowboys are moving up to one and drafting Caleb?
Buddy, they don't got the capital for that.
They have to trade Steven and Jerry.
What would you do if they trade up to one?
I would jump for joy. What do you mean? I don't care who they give up. Don't care. Other than CeeDee Lamb.
All right, you tell me. They trade and
yeah.
They trade to number one, get Caleb Williams,
yeah.
And you put and you're happy?
Yeah. Yeah, I like Caleb.
Who's Caleb playing with?
What do you mean? Like the team? Like you're saying the team's not good?
You would have to trade a good amount of draft capital, probably some players, and you were already talking about how there's not enough stuff.
Yeah, there's. I'm giving up 24.
You're just doing USC Pro? Is that what you're doing there?
Second pick.
You're wilding.
And I'm giving up Jordan Lewis.
You're wilding. You're
wilding.
Think
that's enough for the number one pick?
No. That is not the news. I don't know what Blake's doing over there. What the news is, though, is we've basically gone over pick three, mm-hmm. Where the New England Patriots are picking. We've been like 1, 2, 3, they're going to draft quarterbacks. And the New England Patriots director of scouting, Elliot Wolf, said that the team is open for business to trade the number 3 pick in next week's draft. They said that they would be comfortable staying in selecting a quarterback. However, that's another spot that now opens up if one of these teams maybe wants to get even further ahead, jumps up to 3, and get something shaken there. Also, like, how do you feel about the Patriots maybe saying, we don't necessarily, if there's something that's appealing enough, we can go another year without drafting our quarterback?
So the Cardinals are also have been talking and with trading their pick as well, so 3 and 4 could be up for that. Was like an early
right
draft process thing. And I actually heard someone talking about this about a month ago, about the Patriots trading out. And it kind of seems wild on the surface because you're like, they need a quarterback. And the more and more I get into this draft process, the more stuff I learn. And with them doing this, with quarterback, it's such a – the draft is not just a one-year thing, where it's just – they're looking ahead. They're looking at quarterbacks that are coming down the pipeline in 1 to 2 years, maybe even 3 years, and like, hey, I like this guy's ceiling more. He might be a sophomore in college. He might be a junior, whatever he may be. We know he's coming out at some point. I like his ceiling more. We have a lot of holes to fill on our team. Let's trade back, and we're going to get that quarter. Because once you draft the guy, you're not going to draft another guy the next year probably as a first-round pick. Like, you're investing in this guy. So you're pretty much saying, for the next 5, 6 years, I'm not drafting a quarterback in the first round. Usually, you'd hope. So if they don't believe the guy that's going to be at 3, whether that be Drake May or Jaden Daniels, whoever they know, they might have more know on who's going to possibly fall to them, they might not feel comfortable in him being the quarterback for the next year. So they might feel, hey, we like Quinn Ewers better, and we can get him next year. And I think the Patriots are in a spot where I think trading back might be the most responsible team-building thing to do because they have so many holes on their team. I mean, their defense needs a lot of pieces. You could draft any defensive player you wanted, and they would make their team better. They have both their tackles left. They got nobody to play offensive line. Do I need to go through the skill positions? Yeah, there's absolutely – it's dry there. So I think trading back and then – even trading back again, like, I think they just need to stockpile players. I don't think dropping Jaden Daniels or Drake May, all of a sudden this team is good. You're going to have a similar situation that Carolina had with getting Bryce Young with a bunch of not great pieces around you, and you feel like you, quote-unquote, wasted his rookie year or wasted his whatever it may be. I think sometimes building the foundation is better than just getting the star piece that brings in tickets.
I mean, I don't think you're wrong in that regard. I look at Jerod Mayo and I go, hey, man, good luck. Good luck with that. But I mean, I guess they've given him a level of security. And I guess if you do that, you'd have to be comfortable with the idea that, hey, no, don't worry about it. We expect you to be here a while. We just want to build this thing up a good amount. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes with the New England Patriots. Elsewhere around the NFL, the NFL has reinstated 5 players who were suspended for last season for violating NFL gambling policy. Obviously, gambling and how it relates to, you know, those players actually playing in these leagues has become an even bigger deal over, you know, of recently. Obviously, the Shohei Ohtani, or I guess more accurately, the Ipe Mizuhara stuff with the Dodgers, and then obviously Jontay Porter being kicked out of the NBA.
Presented by FanDuel.
Coming back around and, you know, having this reminder of these players in the NFL that have had gambling things around them. Commanders defensive end Shaka Toney, and then 4 free agents, Rashad Berry, Quintez, Cephas, C.J. Moore, and Demetrius Taylor, were all reinstated after they were suspended during last year. Now, Isaiah Rogers, who is a defensive back, was suspended last year, but he hasn't been reinstated yet. They're still examining his situation, and he had played with the Colts last year and then signed with the Eagles.
Ooh, the Colts one. I think that was the biggest scandal last year. That was one where saying, like,
it was a big one. Yeah. And so
I remember him doing that.
It's just a reminder. I mean, I think the big thing is that it also helps that none of these guys are big time players that people know necessarily. Yeah. But it's just a reminder of like how prevalent this gambling when it comes to professional athletes issue is. And it makes me, I mean, these leagues are going to have to contend with it in a big way.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
What is the reinstating process like for someone who was gambling and messing the game up? What would you suppose? Or if you know the actual answer. I'm just hypothesizing. I have no idea what it is.
I don't know what the actual answer is.
Okay, so what do you think it is? You get caught for gambling. You want to get back into the league.
I imagine making sure that everything, like everything's on the up and up, that you're not doing that no more.
Hey, are you not gambling anymore? No, sir. All right. Well,
I have a strong feeling that they're going to make you like show and prove. Like it's not just going to be like, are you good now? Yes. All right, get out there.
How do you prove that? Like, do you go through rehabilitation of not gambling? They put you through a lot of games and see if you gamble on them in your free time? Like, are you in a room?
It's a good question.
I got a bunch of stuff in front of you. Don't gamble now.
I sincerely don't have an answer for you there, but it is a fair question to ask. What is the process for reinstatement there? And why did that young man, Isaiah Rodgers, not get reinstatement just yet? He's still under. And maybe it's just like until we figure out what's happening with the process of your suspension, right? Like what happened, an investigation of what you actually did. Yeah. And maybe he slowed up the process. I don't know. But he's still waiting for the possibility of him being reinstated as well. As we continue around the NFL, a few teams unveiled some new looks, including the Detroit Lions.
Mm-hmm.
They got a fresh uniform out here, except it looks kind of like it's a redesign. It looks kind of like the uniforms that they were playing with before, although they have now gotten these situations where they've gone back to old block letters. Like, Blake, for you, when it comes to jerseys, do you like things that kind of veer towards traditional? Or do you like it when folks get into this newfangled? I know that there was an era in Oregon, maybe like 5-6 years ago, where they were churning out a whole bunch of like all sorts of newfangled stuff. Like, which one do you veer towards when you look at jersey redesign?
I think you got to just understand the fan base. I think that's the number one thing. I think every fan base is going to be different, whether to stay more traditional or whether to go towards more of a modern look. I think the modern minimalism has kind of overtaken a lot of sports leagues where they just try to simplify the jersey, just have like the team name, not have a bunch of colors going on, simple colors, base colors, and these earth tones, and be very visually appealing, but not too much character going on. I think if you're a city that has a lot of character, show it. If you're New York, put the skyline on the jersey and whatnot.
Oh, that's so tacky. You gonna put the skyline on a jersey?
Maybe not.
The skyline on a jersey?
Okay. If you're Seattle, what's their tower called with the big point?
The Space Needle?
Yeah. If you're maybe the not. Big okay.
Point. Look.
But maybe not put it in.
Let him live, Justin. Let him live.
I didn't know the name. I didn't want to say the wrong name either. Maybe not put it in the middle of the jersey. Maybe it's a little patch. Like, I think if
no, you, but I hear you. Like you something that speaks to the identity. Of
I
the
think
city.
That's cool, yeah. But just don't overdo it and be like Blake and put a whole skyline in the middle of your jersey. But I think
we put a collage of everything that you think of when you think of the city of Detroit.
I think there's a good mix, but I go towards the more traditional. I think so. With a little flair.
Did you get a chance to see these Lions jerseys?
I saw Detroit's. It's very deep blue, dark black.
That Honolulu blue popping in a big way.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right, that's fair, and that's where they are. I mean, we've seen some of the redesigns.
Is it an alternate? I didn't read this. Is it an alternate, or is that their new home and away? Like, these are full-on jerseys. It's just an alternate that I saw.
No, these are the new jerseys
okay,
that they're
so
rocking with.
Okay, so this is full-on. Okay.
But, I mean, there's a lot of things happening as well because we're, you know, obviously the third helmet was approved. Yep. I know that we saw a leak of Houston's, and that thing looks kind of wild. I'm going to need that all the way integrated to get a full idea.
The blue Houston with just, like, the cursive H.
Yeah, it's hard to explain because it is like, I think that whatever the Texan blue is that they use, that deep navy blue. And then they have like kind of a lighter version of blue and red going on. And I'm just like, I don't understand exactly what they're going for.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see what that full jersey looks like because these are just leaks, at least the Houston helmets. Super excited to see what they come up with. But we've seen redesigns this year that have not been all that interesting, like the Jets.
People hated on the Mavs City Edition when those got leaked. And now I promise you, if you were to poll most Mavs fans, that's their favorite jersey. I saw them in the comments. Why are we not wearing those in the playoffs? The black, the City Edition?
Yeah, the ones that were designed by Leon Bridges?
Yeah, when they got leaked, everyone hated them. Everyone hated them. Oh, these are so bad. They're so terrible. Now when they wear them, it's like the favorite jersey among Mavs fans. So sometimes the leak isn't always as good as the full thing.
Yeah, I'm still not fond of those. Before we go here around the NFL, Blake, are you smarter than a fifth grader?
Probably not.
Well, you can figure out. Amazon is rebooting that show. You remember the show that was hosted by Jeff Foxworthy?
I think we should do that on this show.
Absolutely.
I'll write some questions.
Okay, fair enough. I'll be fine.
You'll do great.
Probably, maybe. I don't know. No, I mean, look, That show, there, not all those questions were fifth grade questions. Let's be honest. They were asking questions like, nah, people at college don't know that one. I'm interested to see if the new host knows the answer to some of these, because apparently Travis Kelce is slated to host Amazon's reboot of Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? So in case you did not get enough of Travis Kelce, he is now hosting that show. Are you going to watch the new Amazon reboot of Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Probably not. It'll be a good thing when I'm scrolling on TikTok late at night to see some highlights of it, but I do not care to watch the
entire... We really are lazy as a people. Somebody else cut it up and digest it for me. Just baby bird me this content,
I got too
please.
Much brain power to be focusing on Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader full-on episodes.
I'm too busy for that.
I am. And that's if I want to give y'all the best sports content I can...
Wow, that's a good spin. I like that.
I got to make sure I'm studying and reading up on all the different games.
I gotta watch this film.
Gotta watch
film. Playbook.
And if you're like, Blake, okay, what'd you think of this game? And I'm like, well, I was watching Travis Kelce version of Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader. I didn't watch the game. You're gonna be like, Blake, come on, man. So I'll do the TikTok clips that gives me a little 30-second summary.
Okay, very good. Shout out to Travis Kelce and his other job. He's just stacking up all the jobs. He's gonna be like TV guy when he's done, right?
I think Jason is really underrated as a TV guy.
I think so.
I think he's really good. I think Travis just is a good personality. He's just an easy dude to talk to. So I think he gets on well when it comes to media stuff.
There you go. That's Around the NFL here on the Get Right on 105.3 The Fan. First hour down, we begin the next hour by talking more about Mavs Clippers. Who do you believe are the X factors when it comes to Mavs Clippers? 877-881-1053. We'll discuss that next on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.